Chapter 11. What is this life if, full of care, we have no time to sit and stare at stainless steel mermaids? Not the right words, but for the last 24 hours, Tully Charles A. hadn't had any words. He'd left them behind when Corporal Neng had dragged him out of the Sulaco, or so he thought. Or would have thought if he had the words. But only minutes after he'd wandered into the mall and plumped down on this bench by the stainless steel mermaid fountain, his vocabulary had grown back, or maybe just come out of hiding.
All clear. Ollie Ollie oxen free, it's safe now.
Sure it was. The biggest, most egregious lie ever perpetrated on the human race was that any place in the universe was, at any time, by any stretch of the imagination, safe. Worse, Tully had a terrible feeling that this was the one and only secret of life. The stainless steel mermaids in the center of the fountain were oblivious, untouched by human concerns. They posed prettily on artfully arranged stacks of stainless steel rocks, combing their stainless steel hair, playing with stainless steel starfish, or scanning a distant horizon that only their stainless steel eyes could see. If it was stainless steel, metals had never been Tully's strong suit. It could have been an alloy, or even a trompe-l'oeil plastic coating. Tech was so advanced these days, it could trompe anyone's l'oeil. Except for Spence's. She was never fooled. He'd always envied her clarity, but not today. Today he was okay with being susceptible to illusion. He didn't want to know better. There was nothing better about what he knew, and every time he turned around it got worse. But not in here, in the mall. Not yet. Anchor Point had malls like this on every level, all with restaurants, bars, stores, theaters, and cinemas, both vintage and regular immersive, and in the larger ones, gyms and playing fields. The design was based on the 20th century iteration of the village marketplace, located mostly in suburban areas of North America and some parts of Europe. Tully had always found it amazing that the quintessence of ordinary space station life was something that had been just as ordinary in the days before Earth had achieved space travel. It made him think of the old cosmic fairy tale about time travelers sneaking the concept of malls into the past to prepare humans for a future in space. Some people actually believed that was a reasonable hypothesis. The concept of reasonable no longer meant anything to him. He had wandered wordlessly into the mall because it was an ordinary place where only ordinary things could happen. Drinking and eating, shopping, maybe a pickup game of basketball or soccer. Ordinary in extremis, where monsters never drop down from the ceiling. Tully looked up. 50 feet overhead, there was a fake skylight showing a hollow-looped fake blue sky with fake fluffy clouds. There was also a rainy sky and sometimes snow, just for variety. All very authentic fakes. Anyone bored with fake sky could opt for the reality of a black void and unchanging stars, visible from the scenic outlook on the mezzanine level. They could also toss wish tokens down at the mermaids. His gaze fell on a mermaid who seemed to be staring at something over his left shoulder. Suddenly, unsettled, Tully got up and walked quickly to the nearest transit access spot. When the train arrived, he planted himself in the doorway and took a careful look around the small carriage, especially at the ceiling, before he sat down. The handful of other passengers ignored him, and he felt an intense surge of envy. They were so lucky. None of them had any idea that they lived in a universe where savage creatures could come out of nowhere to kill them in unimaginably horrible ways. Well, he wasn't about to tell them. They'd just think he was crazy. And they wouldn't like him any better when they found out he wasn't. He found Spence alone in the tissue lab, handling something in a petri dish within the confines of a safety tank. Her face was a mix of deep concentration tinged with annoyance. She hated tanks, said the glove mountings were badly positioned and had too little freedom of movement. She looked up when she heard the door open and her jaw dropped.
Hey,
Tully said faintly.
Jesus, Charlie, you look like homemade shit, she said.
God-awful homemade shit that went bad a month ago. She covered the petri dish, put it down, and wriggled out of the rubbery white gloves with some effort. As usual, she'd forgotten to powder.
What the fuck happened down there in the Sulaco? There's this security blackout?
Yeah, there is, he said, feeling heavy with fatigue now.
Me included. I had to sign a whole new set of forms. I can't tell you shit. Not even god-awful homemade shit.
His smile was brief.
Talk to anybody and I lose my shares. All my shares. Instantly. No appeal. I'm just out.
You're joking. Her eyes widened, making her look very young. Then again, she was very young, Tully thought. A lot younger than he was now, after the Sulaco. Compared to him, she was a baby.
Right?
Wish I were, he said, unhappily. Spence started to say something else, but he talked over her.
So, what's Dr. Trent got for me to dick around with this shift?
She hesitated, then led him to a nearby workbench and a larger, more elaborate safety tank equipped with Waldos instead of gloves.
Here you go,
she said as she plucked something from the inbox beside it. She started to give it to him, then hesitated again.
Are you sure you're up to a shift? She asked with very real concern. You really do look like homemade shit gone bad.
Tully beckoned, and she handed over a small item wrapped in a printout with a rubber band around it. He removed the rubber band, ignored the printout, and held up a small metal canister. There were marks on it that looked like red crayon.
All yours, whatever it is, Spence told him. Orders are you use the Waldo tank, or we all have to suit up in full biohazard gear and seal the lab. No unprotected exposure.
That made him frown, but Tully slipped the canister into the insertion chamber and waited for it to be dumped into the tank, airlock style. Airlocks were supposed to be good protection, but the Sulacos hadn't worked very well.
Damn it, Tully.
Spence grabbed his arm, hard. He turned to her, wondering how he could have upset her already.
What did happen on the Sulaco?
Her fingers dug into his bicep.
How come they're ordering so many biopsies on the three survivors? And where'd the sudden backlog of autopsies come from? That's why nobody else is here, in case you hadn't noticed. Pathology requisitioned most of our people and locked them down in ultra-clean rooms.
Tully drew back a little, wishing he could just tell her he had no idea what she was talking about. Unfortunately, he'd already said too much, and even if he hadn't, she'd never let him off the hook that easily.
And why the hell is everything XXX classified?
She went on, practically yelling now.
Two spooks from Gateway come in today, and they're walking around like they just bought the place. What's that about? Come on, Tully, what the fuck?
Okay. Tully pried her fingers off his arm, rubbing the muscle and wincing. He wasn't sure what scared him more, getting busted by company fascists or a long black tail swooping down either to impale him or strangle him.
Not now, all right? Later. And not here.
When Charlie didn't want to talk about something, Spence knew he was either scared or embarrassed. Either way, a full-on interrogation wouldn't work. What she had to do was peck at him little by little, preferably while he was busy with a complicated assignment. Eventually, she'd wear him down and he'd spill. This time, however, she'd have to work a lot harder to reach him. It wasn't just that he'd been gone for more than 24 hours. That happened to everyone. Every so often, a couple of higher-ups started obsessing over a specimen or a process or a system and requested a full, unabridged workup. If you got tapped for one of those, you could end up sequestered for days or even weeks, grinding away on the project, logging every detail in real time, minus any mention of the meds that kept you going, until either there was no more data to grind out, or the higher-ups saw a new shiny thing to obsess about and they let you go home. Spence had been through several of those, although Tully had done more. It was one of the disadvantages of being the senior tech. He was also the best, although Spence was trying hard to catch up with him. Seeing him like this, however, made her wonder if she wanted to. Jackson wouldn't have pulled him out of downtime early just for a routine assignment, but why ops had needed the top tech to collect air samples was beyond her. A bot could have done it. Then she'd heard there'd been more Marines than civilians on the deck crew. That usually happened when the Marines had to impress some VIP. She'd planned to squeeze every detail out of Charlie the moment he came back, but then he hadn't come back, and she couldn't find out why. The Sulaco had fallen into a high-security black hole from which nothing could escape, not even a single paranoid rumor. And just as two spooks had arrived from Millisai's weapons division. Coincidence? Not fucking likely. Instead of going back to her own assignment, Spence grabbed the last clean mug from the shelf under the workbench and went to the coffee machine on the counter against the back wall. The machine made single cups, as well as tea and hot chocolate and even broth, although anyone who tried that last knew by the smell that they'd made a terrible mistake. The coffee machine stood next to a small sink, usually crowded with unwashed coffee cups. Under the counter was a half-height fridge filled with soft drinks nobody liked. Spence rooted around in the basket of coffee capsules, found a variety she didn't hate, and popped it into the machine, sneaking glances over her shoulder at Tully while she waited. He didn't react to the sound of the machine or ask her to make one for him. If he was that preoccupied, maybe she could catch him off guard. Cup in hand, she parked herself on a stool a short distance behind him and to the right, which put her just beyond his peripheral vision while giving her a good view of the monitor on the shelf above the tank. The feed from the electron microscope was high res, but she wasn't sure what she was seeing. It looked like android blood cells, but they were bonded to some kind of black substance, which everyone knew was impossible. "Hey, Spence," he said suddenly, "you got any idea what this shit is? Or where it came from?" Should have known better than to try sneaking up on him, Spence thought. "Didn't you look at the printout?" She got up and took it off the desk, scanned it quickly, then read it over more carefully. "The stuff's from the Sulaco, and it's..." She cut off as she increased the magnification. The black blobs looked more porous and lumpy, but the lumps were oddly regular, like something inorganic disguised as biological material. "God, Charlie, what the fuck is that?" Spence tossed the printout aside. It glanced off the workbench and fell to the floor. "I asked you first," he said, absently increasing the magnification. The blob contained a system of tunnels or channels, and the texture made Spence think of insect secretions. Plenty of insect species on many different worlds built homes from matter produced by their own bodies, but there was no visible evidence of any actual bugs here. No spore or frass, the Marines could call off their bug hunt. Unless the bug hunt had already happened and this was all that was left. This and Tully. Spence shifted uncomfortably. "Can you up the res?" she asked. Charlie cranked it to maximum without increasing the magnification. "Yeah." She picked up the printout lying on the floor near her feet. "It says this was taken from what was left of a dismembered artificial person," she said, "from still liquid artificial blood inside the thigh tissue." "Did they find the rest of the body?" She read more. "No, just the legs." Spence put the printout on the workbench. A puff of air from the ventilation system sent it to the floor again. "Am I crazy, or is that black crap bonded to the artificial blood cells?" "At the molecular level," he confirmed. "Whether you're crazy or not." "But that's impossible," Spence said. "Synth blood is inert." Charlie gave a single, humorless laugh. "Looks like somebody found a workaround for that one. Probably should have seen it coming."